Well, we know plastic is detrimental to the environment, but we don't seem to be able to shake our obsession with making and buying all things plastic. And here in Australia, we are still having great difficulty recycling it effectively. Over the weekend, the Environment Minister, Tanya Plibersek, was involved in leading negotiations for a global plastics treaty in Paris. But back home, of course, with the collapse of soft plastic recycling firm Redcycle and warehouses filling up with used bottles and paper with nowhere to go, there are some urgent problems that need solutions. Tanya Plibersek is back from overseas. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Hamish. It's great to be with you.
The treaty aims to end plastic pollution by 2040, including a legally binding target to phase out plastic waste products by 2025. That's just a year and a half away. How are we supposed to do that, given where we're at?
Well, we do have a long way to go in Australia. We set some very ambitious targets under the previous government, but we didn't do much towards implementing them. So we've really had to get our skates on domestically. We've invested $250 million in new recycling facilities with $60 million in the previous October budget specifically for hard-to-recycle plastics like those soft plastics you mentioned. So we've got about 48 new recycling facilities being built. About 12 of them have already been delivered. That almost doubles our recycling capacity by 2025, and yet we will still need to do more. So we've made sure that both the Clean Energy Finance Corporation and our new National Reconstruction Fund have the capacity to invest in new recycling and remanufacturing facilities, but also in alternatives to plastic. I mean, there's a lot of exciting work being done on basically replacing plastic packaging with materials made from things like kelp or algae or other, cornstarch, sugarcane. There's a bunch of other things that people are experimenting with. If we can get some of those replacement materials up and going at an industrial scale, that'd be great, because as you're growing them, you're sucking carbon dioxide out of the environment, not putting it into the environment as you do with petrochemical-based plastics. So we've got the CSIRO working on a plan to end plastic waste. We're working with the chief scientist. I've got a ministerial advisory group to advance the circular economy as well. And that's really important because about 70% of waste is locked in at the design phase of an object. So if we can change the design of things to make them easier to recycle, to be using less problematic plastics in the first place, again, we reduce our overall plastic pollution.
Sure.
And the important I was just going to say one more thing. The important thing is to get some national consistency in this stuff, because we've got really quite different recycling protocols in different states and territories, and even at council level, there's a lot of inconsistencies here. So we actually need to work together nationally to get that done.
But as you acknowledge, much of what you've just described are plans, and I'm interested in the fact that you've been working with international bodies to try and get an agreement, but countries like Saudi Arabia, China, even the US have been resisting calls for a legally binding target. They want countries to be able to set their own targets. How can you convince other countries to agree to this stuff when Australia itself has had such difficulty in delivering on its expectations?
Well, in fact, it's easier. If we come to an international agreement, it's easier for every country to get there. And the really bizarre thing, almost bizarre thing, at this plastics treaty was having international companies that are big producers of plastic waste, like Unilever and Nestle and Coca-Cola, turning up and saying, just regulate. You know, it's actually easier for businesses that are big producers of plastic waste to reduce their reliance on plastic if there's a legally binding international instrument, because that consistency allows them to invest in and make the changes they need to make to their business model to get there. So it's quite an unusual thing, I have to say, as a minister, to have large companies saying, just regulate.
But don't these other countries point at you and say, well, look, you've got problems yourself, you're sending stuff off overseas to be recycled, you've got trucks turning up and picking up recycling and taking it straight to landfill. I mean, the stories are almost relentless about the problems in our recycling systems.
Yeah, and I think it is important to acknowledge that we've still got a way to go. as a nation, but that strong international ambition gives us something to aim for and countries to cooperate with. And that helps all of us get there. I mean, we're entering into free trade agreements. We're working on one with Europe at the moment. By working cooperatively with Europe, we lift our ambition here in Australia because they've got higher standards on some of the recycling and plastic types of plastic and plastic additives. If we can align domestically with some of those European targets, of course that helps us domestically. So working internationally helps us in Australia. And, you know, I certainly didn't go to Paris saying everybody should do what Australia's doing at the moment. I'm the first to acknowledge that we've inherited, a situation where we really need to lift our game domestically, but we're investing to do that. It actually takes a while to build a new recycling facility. We've got 48 of them. We've got 12 that have already been opened. We will close to double our recycling capacity by 2025. The most recent PET plastic bottle decision I made to allow PET plastic bottles to be shipped overseas, to be recycled overseas, that won't have to happen in the future because we'll be increasing our plastic recycling capacity here in Australia. We've got to get those facilities built. I'm visiting these new facilities as they open. It's really exciting that we're getting this work done, but it takes a while to build a new facility.
Tanya Plibersek, we had the Greens leader Adam Banse on this program yesterday accusing your government of giving sweetheart deals to the Woodside-led project for gas on the Northwest Shelf off WA because of the fact that they won't be exposed to these changes to the petroleum resources rent tax and essentially won't be forced to pay more tax on it. Is that a fair assessment, a sweetheart deal?
Well, no, it's the sort of thing that you'd expect from Adam Banse, but we're working very hard.
Why don't they have to pay these additional taxes?
We're working really hard in Australia to get to net zero carbon emissions by 2050. We've got a legislated pathway to get there. We'll reduce our emissions by 43% by 2030.
But on the specifics of this, respectfully, Minister.
No government has done more to get us to on the path to net zero than this government. And I'm really
But what about this particular case? Why has this project been exempted from paying those additional taxes?
Well, if you want to talk about specific decisions made in the budget about the tax regime, you might want to get the Treasurer on the program.
Sure, we have invited him on, but you're the Environment Minister and clearly these matters overlap somewhat with your areas. Do you think it's right that a Woodside-led project for gas on the Northwestern Shelf shouldn't be paying these additional taxes?
Well, what I think is right is that we get Australia to net zero carbon emissions and we're on a path to do that. It is really important that both in Australia and globally, we get to net zero. Of course, that has an impact on the environment. And that's why we're introducing our net zero legislation. That's why we've got our safeguard mechanism up and running. That's why we've signed the methane pledge. That's why I've legislated stronger ozone protection. That's why we're investing in making sure that Australians can buy electric vehicles if they want to. It's why we're seeing a massive increase in investment in renewable energy projects. I've doubled the approvals of renewable energy projects. It's why we're investing $20 billion in upgrading our transmission lines so that our electricity grid can handle the new amount of renewables that we're putting into the grid. It's why we're acting to get carbon emissions down in Australia.
On the PwC issue, obviously that's going to be before Senate estimates again today. We'll be hearing from the Tax Practitioners Board. It's being investigated by the AFP. Does your department have contracts with PwC? Do you have faith in PwC to deliver them?
Yeah, well, one of the very first things, obviously, I did as a minister when I saw this story was check whether we've got contracts. We do have a small number of small-value contracts, and I've asked the Secretary of the Department to meet with PwC and make sure that there are strict controls around those contracts to ensure that they're being done in an ethical way. This is obviously a very concerning development. It does come as a result, I think, of the fact that the previous government, you know, pretended to be cutting the number of public servants. Well, in fact, they did cut the number of public servants, but they replaced them with a whole lot of people on these short-term contracts in 2020-21. They spent $21 billion on outsourcing work that, you know, much of which could have more properly been done by public servants. In my own department, we had hundreds of people on short-term contracts doing ongoing work. So okay, we've made those people permanent, and the government will continue to work to make sure that contractors, where they are used, are used in an ethical way. Yep.
Tania Plibersek, we'll have to leave it there. Appreciate your time this morning. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Hamish. See you.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.